I hope they all die, he hissed. It would serve them right. They were acting like some hotshot cowboys when he knew they were on a suicide mission. While they were up there trying to get killed, he'd do what he could to get rid of the Bible thumpers and live in the house all alone. Maybe he'd find a lady to keep him company. There were sure to be a few of them wandering around, lonely and in need of protection. He could provide that. With the house and the supplies, his status would be elevated. The pretty ladies would come crawling to him, begging. He'd get to be choosy. He'd get to be the one doing the rejecting. He had to believe this was karma finally working in his favor. Even as he thought of what type of woman he'd really like, he heard voices and knew their guests were close. He wiped his hand on his shirt and schooled his features before emerging from the trees. He stood in the middle of the driveway, wanting everyone to know who was going to be in charge. Seriously? He groaned under his breath. There was no way he could turn them away now. Those damned horses were tied to a nearby tree, and the group clearly recognized them. Not when Austin and his brother were right inside. Making things even more aggravating, a teen boy started up the hill toward him, leading the group. A pretty woman was right behind him, followed by a variety of young and old. It wasn't exactly an army, but the kid in front was carrying a gun. Wendell hoped he knew how to use it. He certainly didn't want to have to play hero should they actually be attacked while Ennis and his brother were gone. He preferred to stick to the shadows, where it was safe. It had kept him alive this long. He wasn't stupid enough to go towards danger. Only idiots and dead men did that. 33. Savannah had never been so afraid in her life. The man had said very little to her since those first conversations, if they could even be called that. Since then, they had shown up at a huge tower after a breakneck ride on horseback. It had felt surreal to navigate the city streets on a horse, weaving around stalled cars and more dead bodies than she'd cared to count. The stench had been disgusting and made her vomit twice. Then, when they'd finally reached their destination, she'd been made to climb 6 flights of stairs, with the man essentially dragging her most of the way up before she'd been tossed in a tiny maintenance closet with no windows. He'd later brought her a candy bar and a bottle of water and led her to a bathroom that stunk to high heaven. At the moment, she had no idea how long it had been since he'd let her out of the closet. It felt like hours, but it could have been only an hour for all she knew. Footsteps coming closer alerted her to company, and she steeled herself for what was to come. He'd made it clear that if his father didn't show up with what he demanded, she would be killed. She didn't know if there was a time limit involved, but it had sure sounded like it. The door opened, and sunlight flooded the closet, blinding her. Hello? She asked, her hand over her eyes to guard against the sudden light. Get up, her captor demanded, his voice now familiar. She scrambled to her feet, blinking several times to let her eyes adjust to the light. He reached for her without waiting, grabbing her arm and leading her down a hallway. They were in an office building, she knew, with desks in the center and smaller offices along one side of the hall. It seemed like a strange place for a kidnapper to hole up, but there was no way she'd question him about it. "Where are we going?" she asked, trying to hide the fear in her voice. She wanted to be brave, to make her father proud, but the man terrified her. "It's dinner time," he grumbled. "Oh," she whispered, worried it was a Last Supper situation. He pushed open another door to what looked like a break room of sorts. There was an assortment of vending machine food offerings scattered on the circular table in the room. eat, he grumbled, shoving her into a chair. She reached for a Snickers bar, tearing the package and taking a greedy bite. Why am I here? She asked, hoping to get a more complete answer than she'd yet been given.
You're here because your dad has something we need.
We? She asked. He sat down across from her, his steely gray eyes intimidating and almost lifeless, like he was a man without a soul.
We are the New World Order. We are the people who will be running the world. Your dad has the last piece we need to implement our domination.
She raised an eyebrow at him when he stopped there, apparently serious. The man was crazy, like certifiably psycho. He belonged in a hospital. How had she been so lucky to grab his attention? He was one of those guys they made movies about, and she certainly didn't want to be a part of his story. She swallowed another bite of the candy bar.
The New World Order? What is that? She asked, hoping to get him talking.
He smirked.
It's a group of people who want to make this world a better place. We're saviors of sorts, I guess you could say.
Saviors, she repeated, choking back the hysterical laugh that had just threatened to escape her lips. He stared her down, unbothered by her obvious disbelief.
You were traveling with a group of religious people, right?
Yes.
Then you've probably heard about the cleansing of the earth, he said, as if it was something obvious.
She slowly shook her head.
No, I haven't.
He didn't look like he believed her. We have to cleanse the earth and start over. The governments around the world are useless. They're only out for themselves. There's so much scandal and cheating as the politicians scramble to get rich off the backs of the people. We're here to wipe the slate clean.
How are you going to wipe the slate clean? She asked quietly, unsure if she even wanted to know the answer.
He glared back at her, looking at her as if she were something to be squashed just for asking a question. It's already started. We're cleansing the cities, starting with this one. We're not a big enough group to eliminate those who wish to rebel against us or don't want to buy into our new way of living, so we've had to resort to other methods, he said with a disgusting smile.
The lynch mobs, she whispered as realization dawned.
He grinned. Smart girl. People love to hate and blame others for their problems. We're strategically helping them decide who they should hate. They're eliminating the problem for us.
You mean they're killing each other, like the people who killed the man I was traveling with?
He reached for a bag of chips and tore it open. Yes, he replied, no hint of remorse in his voice.
Jim was a good man. He never hurt anyone. They tried to kill us because Jim was a preacher, she exclaimed.
Like I said, people need someone to hate. We provided them with a target. Only the strong will survive. Those are the people we want in the new world we are building. We can't have weak people who think they know better. We need people who will accept our rule and help us become the strongest nation in the world. No, scratch that. There will only be one nation that will rule over the entire world. And that starts right here, he said, jabbing his finger into the table.
What do you mean it starts here? She asked, trying to decide if he was really a madman with a very active imagination, or if he was truly working with a group of people.
He smiled. This city will be our home base. You are sitting in the future headquarters of the New World Order. You are getting a front row seat in the making of history.
I don't understand why I'm here. Why me and my dad? Why us out of all the people in the world? She demanded.
He chuckled. You're no one special. So understand that right now, and neither is your father, really. But he was given something. That involved you. You're here because your father has something I want, and that's it. When he gives me what I want, I don't care what happens to you." She flinched at the cold tone. He wasn't exaggerating. She could see it in his eyes. He truly didn't care one way or another if she died.
"What does he have? He's a writer. We don't have a lot of money. He's no one special either," she said, hoping to dissuade the man of whatever crazy idea he had about who her father was. "What people give him are words to tell their stories. That's it."
The man looked at her, sneering with disgust. "He has far more than words. But what it is isn't your concern. That's between me and your daddy. He knows, and I know, and you don't need to worry your pretty little head about it." "If it's really that important, he's not going to give it to you," she said defiantly.
"Are you saying you're not important to him?"
"I know that's a lie. He's traveled across the country injured to get to you. He'll bring it," he said, with that fake smile again.
"Injured?" she echoed, freezing in the motion of picking up another candy bar. "What do you mean?"
The man shrugged before crumpling up his empty bag of chips and tossing it into the trash can. "He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he took a bullet or two."
Savannah felt physically ill. "Shot? You shot him?" she whispered.
"I didn't, but I believe my colleague did." She shook her head, imagining what her father had gone through. She'd known there was no way he'd have left her alone. He'd been shot. Her mind reeled with what that could mean, but she assured herself he had to be okay if he was on his way to her. That was a good sign. Her eyes met the man staring her down, and she fought to keep from flinching. There was a dead quality to them, and he was an evil man. But they'd somehow come out on top. She knew her dad, and knew he would do whatever it took to save her. This man would get what he wanted, and they'd be okay. Somehow. Savannah was about to tell him exactly how she felt about him when he stood up abruptly, his chair flying backwards.
"What's wrong?"
she asked. "It's time to move," he announced. "Move! We've wasted enough time here." She knew that if she didn't move under her own steam, he would drag her. She quickly followed him out of the room before he pushed her in front of him, pointing her back the way they'd come. This time, though, he took her past the closet where she'd been stashed before. As they moved down the hall, she heard voices, and then they moved into a more open area that looked to have been cleared of furniture. There were men and women everywhere, all of them wearing plain black jumpsuits, milling around the area. Some were talking and laughing, while others looked to be hard at work, sitting at desks on the outskirts of the room and hunched over drawings. Her eyes scanned the area as her captor forced past them and into what was a huge corner office suite. "Have a seat. This is where you wait for your daddy," he sneered, pushing her down onto a leather couch. There was a large desk positioned in front of a bank of windows that overlooked the city below. Artwork covered the walls, and weird sculptures were positioned on shelves built into a wall.
"Where are we?"
she asked. He looked around the room, his lip curled with disdain. "This is the heart of corporate greed. All the crap in here probably cost millions of dollars. Money stolen from hard-working citizens." Savannah looked down at the rug between the couch and matching leather chairs and saw a dark stain. Her stomach turned, knowing it was blood.
"Why?"
she whispered, staring down at it. "He was part of the problem. He owned this building because he was a cheater and a liar. Men like him were some of the first eliminated. This is our building now, and I will be using this office for the time being," he said, plopping down in the massive chair behind the desk and putting his legs up on the corner of the wooden desk. She shook her head, not understanding what he had planned. "Now what?" "We wait," he said with a smile. 34. The city was burning, and Austin couldn't believe his eyes as they looked at the orange glow filling the night sky. His daughter was in there somewhere. He only prayed she was uninjured. He would kill anyone who hurt her. "Are you sure you know where we're going?" Austin asked Nash again, as they each climbed into their own kayak.
"I do. I'll lead. We need to stick to the shadows along the edges of the water."
Austin folded his big body into a kayak, praying he didn't tip the thing over. He'd gone kayaking exactly once in his life, and that felt like 100 years ago. Each of them had slid an AR-15 into their kayak, and they were each carrying a handgun and extra magazines for each of their weapons. They were prepared for a gun battle, no question. The only thing they were missing was Kevlar. He could have really used some Kevlar in this moment. With nothing more to be said in preparation, they began their slow ride down the river, the paddles barely making a sound. Water lapped against the sides of the kayaks, each person looking left and right as they surveyed the massive destruction beyond the river's banks. At first, there was nothing to see but abandoned homes. But then came worse. Bodies, destruction, and fire. A lot of fire. The trip felt like it took forever at first, approaching the inner city as silently and calmly as they were. But Austin soon got the hang of kayaking again and began to see the beauty of this approach. Nobody would be expecting gun-toting outsiders to come in via kayak, of all things, and their movement was all but silent. Before long, the city loomed up around them, rising from the banks of the river in a way that felt more surreal than anything as they rowed closer to the heart of the city.
"Freeze!" Nash hissed.
Austin struggled to bring his vessel to a stop, sliding close to the bank of the river. They could hear shouting, and suddenly shadowy figures emerged from one of the buildings. It was a large group of people, with men, women, and children all huddled together as they moved into the street. It was then Austin saw two men, both of them wearing all black, escorting the crowd out. They had semi-automatic rifles aimed at the huddled group as smoke billowed from the windows in the 5-story building. Clearly it had been lit on fire.
"We told you, leave. Leave or you die," one of the men in black said.
"We have nowhere to go,"
a woman's voice pleaded.
"You can't stay here. We warned you," the man replied.
Austin's hands tightened on the paddle. Could he stand by and watch these men kill women and children? He turned back to look at his brother in the shadows cast from the orange glow of the fires blazing on either side of the river.
"We can't," he whispered. "I can't watch this. I have to do something," he hissed. "Austin, they'll kill us," Amanda said gently from behind him.
"Not if we kill them first," he replied, pulling his AR-15 from beside him, resting it in his lap as he steered the kayak forward and into the shore. He could hear the groans of frustration from the others as they all followed suit. From everyone but the kid, Nash, anyway. The river was several feet below the roadway above, giving them a slight advantage. They spread out, all of them flat on their bellies, as they slid like alligators up the embankment.
"Please, we'll leave in the morning," a man begged. "We warned you. Leave or be killed. This is our city," one of the men replied,
the first flames licking up the side of the building from where the group had just emerged.
Austin watched in horror as the man in a plain black uniform, which looked identical to those of the men in the wrecked Humvee, raised his gun, aiming it at the man begging for his life. He popped up, not able to watch a man be shot at point-blank range in front of his wife and children. He aimed his weapon and fired, somewhat surprised at himself for the steadiness he felt and the lack of hesitation. His aim was true, hitting the man in the center of his chest and dropping him like a rock. From his left, he heard the loud crack of a gun. He glanced over and saw Amanda with her Beretta in hand before he looked back at the other man in black, where he lay on the ground, his face now missing. It was then he heard children screaming, and the crowd of people they'd been attempting to save moved away from them. Hysteria and panic made them loud, which was sure to draw unwanted attention. Austin held up his free hand, his weapon hanging limp and pointing at the ground. "It's okay. We're not going to hurt you," he called out. Murmurs erupted, some of the children quieting down into sobs, and then a figure stepped forward. "Thank you. You saved my life," the man who'd been targeted said, stepping up to shake Austin's hand. "No problem. What's going on here?" he asked. "They came into the city a couple weeks back. They've been systematically clearing everyone out. They warned us we would be killed if we stayed. But my little one, she's been sick. We have nowhere to go," the man explained. Austin nodded in understanding. "I think it's best you try and leave now." "We will. We knew we couldn't stay forever. But why are you here? Are you with the government? Are you here to kill them?" he asked hopefully. "No. Someone has my daughter. I'm here to get her back." The man grimaced. "These are not good people. I hope your daughter's okay," he said. "Do you know anything about David Tower?" Nash asked, moving up to stand beside Austin. The man's face visibly paled, the orange glow of the fire burning in the building behind them making him look ghostly. "That's their building," he stated. "There? There who?" Amanda questioned. The man shook his head, suddenly looking as if he wanted to run. "I don't know. They call themselves the NWO, the New World Order. That tower is their headquarters. They come and go out of there all day long. At night they do their sweeps," he explained. "Sweeps?" Ennis asked. "Anyone trying to hide in the city is killed or run off. They go through every building. They're well organized." Austin felt his heart sinking. "How many of them are there?" "I don't know. I'd guess 100 or so, maybe more. They've been handing out flyers, trying to get people to turn on each other. I think they want us to kill each other so they don't have to waste their bullets. My family and I, we've been lying low with one of our neighbors. We hope to ride this out. I don't know what's happening, but it's bad, real bad," he said, looking towards his family. "We need to go," Austin said, feeling an ever-growing sense of urgency to get his daughter as far from the New World Order as possible. "If you don't mind, we're going to take their weapons. We need the protection, and seeing as how you're already armed, I'm guessing you won't mind?" the family man asked, if in a way that said he wasn't asking at all. "Go for it," Ennis replied. "Good luck," the man called out, and with that he headed off to snatch the rifles before rejoining his family. "Do we take the kayaks, or should we try and walk?" Ennis asked. "Water, there's still a good 3 miles between us and the tower. I think we need to avoid the sweeps," Nash advised. "I agree," Amanda said. "Then let's go," Austin said, already moving back to the water. Once again, the group of four moved silently through the water, each of them lost in their own thoughts as they moved deeper into the city and saw the incredible amount of destruction. There were large piles of smoldering rubble where buildings had once stood proudly, and bodies lying limp on the ground near dead vehicles and burned buildings. Whoever the New World Order was, They obviously didn't care about retaining the existing structures or respecting life. It seemed almost as if they were aiming to wipe out any signs of civilization.
"Here,"
Nash whispered from his spot at the front of the line. They all moved to the side, banking their kayaks under a four-lane bridge that connected the new downtown with the older part of the city. Nash led the way once they disembarked, running across a major thoroughfare dotted with stalled cars.
"Where?"
Austin whispered.
2 blocks south,"
Nash replied, pointing in the general direction of the tower. Austin nodded, looking for another place to shield them from view. Once he made his decision, he raced across the road, the others following behind him.
"Hey, who's out there?"
a male voice shouted, cutting through the darkness.
"Down,"
Ennis hissed, dropping to a low squat.
"We'll shoot first and ask questions later,"
a female voice yelled. Austin couldn't help being surprised to hear a woman. He'd come to the silly conclusion that only men would be a part of this movement to destroy the country one city at a time.
"I'll shoot first and ask questions later," Amanda snapped back in a whisper, clearly not happy.
"We'll wait until they come into view, and then we shoot," Austin instructed them.
"Are you sure you want to kill them?" Nash asked. "We could wait for them to pass by."
"No. No survivors. We need to take out as many as we can. We can't have them reporting back that we're here. All we have on our side is the element of surprise," Austin hissed.
"You don't think the gunfire will alert them to our presence?" Ennis asked.
Austin thought about it for a second.
"No. They're shooting people already.
We'll check the bodies for comms, though, and this time I want us to take their weapons."
"Good idea," Ennis agreed.
"Let's do this. Spread out. If you see one, shoot. Don't ask questions. Be prepared to get shot at. Stay low," Austin ordered.
Austin stayed with Amanda while Ennis and Nash moved to hug the side of a building about 40 feet away. They could hear voices coming closer, and now Austin realized it was more than two. He was suddenly very nervous about his plan.
Amanda quietly raised her weapon, the butt of the AR resting against her right shoulder as she prepared to take her shot. Austin followed suit, praying he would get lucky a second time and hit his mark. The glow of a cigarette gave him a place to aim, and he lined the shot up and pulled the trigger. The crack of the rifle made his ears ring, muffling the sound of Amanda's rapid-fire shooting as the bullets began to fly in their direction. It was a solid 20 seconds of firing, as both sides shot blindly in the dark. Amanda eventually put her hand on his arm, quietly telling him to stop shooting. He did, still holding the rifle up at the ready.
"Did we get them?"
he asked, hoping he was whispering, but sure he was probably speaking way too loudly.
"I'll check," Nash hollered.
"I'll cover you," Amanda said, stepping closer to the road where the cigarette butt still glowed red on the ground. Austin stayed next to the building, prepared to shoot. Then he heard a single shot from a small caliber gun.
"Clear,"
Amanda's voice rang out. Austin shook his head with amazement. Amanda presented herself as a beautiful, well-mannered woman, but she could be ruthless and deadly. He was glad she was on his side. The four of them quickly searched the 6 bodies that lay dead in the street, and Austin was surprised to realize there had been so many of them. It had been pure luck that none of their group had been shot. It buoyed him, helping him believe in the surprise factor.
"These'll come in handy, full automatics," Ennis said, holding up one of the rifles he'd taken off the men and single woman of the group before beginning to dig for extra magazines along with the rest of them.
"Are they military?" Nash asked, studying the gun he had grabbed.
"Altered," Amanda said firmly.
"Altered?"
Nash questioned.
"Bump stocks,"
Ennis clarified, Make sure to check every pocket, guys. We need the extra magazines.
Whatever works, take them and let's go, Austin said, anxious to get to Savannah.
They were all weighed down with their proffered weapons now, each of them carrying a semi-auto handgun, their original ARs, and now the soldiers' modified AR-15s as well. Austin finally felt confident they had a fighting chance. They walked through the city streets, sticking to the back alleys and shadows. More burning buildings and fresh, dead bodies littered the streets, so that Austin wished he could kill the group that had been responsible for these deaths all over again. People lay everywhere in the streets, some of them killed execution style, with their hands still bound behind them, their bodies half kneeling and slumped against one another, blood covering the ground.
"This is awful," Amanda gasped, as they passed a family of five who'd been killed in the street in front of an apartment building.
"We need to get Savannah and get the hell out of here."
"That's the tower," Nash announced, pointing to the tall building in front of them. It was easy to pick out, too. It was the only building with lights glowing in the windows. Austin turned to look at Ennis, Nash, and Amanda.
"This is where I go alone. Thank you for all your help. If I don't see you again, I want you all to know I appreciate all you've done. If Savannah makes it out, and I don't, take care of her," he said to his brother. Ennis slapped him on the shoulder.
"We'll see you soon. Hurry up now so we can get back home before Wendell finds the rest of my stash."
That earned a smile from Austin as he gave a nod and set out on his own. 35. Austin approached the front entrance of the tower from the shadows, seeing eight armed guards standing in front of the four sets of double doors that opened into a lobby. Each of them had another modified AR-15 slung over their shoulder. Knowing there was no way he could kill all of them without being killed, and also understanding that he was expected, if not now, then later, he moved out into the open so that they all had a clear view of him and began walking slowly up toward the doors.
"Stop," one of the guards said, stepping forward. "State your business or leave before we shoot."
The other guards all aimed their weapons at him. It was intimidating, but he'd have walked through fire to get to his daughter.
"I'm here to see Xander," he said. "He left me a note to come here, for my daughter."
The guard stepped closer, looking him up and down.
"You are?"
"Austin Merriman." The guard looked over his shoulder, back to where another man stood near the wall, apparently guarding a door. The tall Hispanic man gave a curt nod. At that, the guard who'd been speaking to him walked forward and met him just beyond the doorway.
"We'll relieve you of your weapons." "This one looks like one of ours," the guard said, pulling the strap of the rifle down Austin's left arm before removing the second. Then it was the gun holstered on his thigh before he was given a quick pat down.
"I'll take him up," the Hispanic man called from behind them. Austin stepped forward, anxious to get it all over with. He highly doubted he was going to be able to walk out with his daughter. There would be some kind of showdown, and he was honestly prepared to die if it even gave her a shot at survival. All he could do was hope Savannah made it out alive and got to Ennis.
"Where are we going?" Austin asked, his eyes scanning the dark lobby.
It appeared that lights were only being used on the upper floors. Everything here lay in shadows. Small glows emanated from what looked to be glow-in-the-dark strips along the halls, but that was about it.
"Stairs, ahead and to the left," the man answered.
Austin pulled open the door marked with a picture of stairs and entered into a stairwell that was nearly pitch black. He stuck his foot out, feeling for the first stair, and began to climb. He moved upward at a faster pace than he was comfortable with,
but he let the guard lead. Soon his bad leg especially was burning, but he could feel the strain in both his legs' muscles. He hadn't been getting as much exercise as these guards, clearly. He wasn't sure how high they'd gone, but despite his muscles aching, he wouldn't let himself ask for a break.
"How much farther?" he grunted.
The man chuckled.
"Couple more flights."
Austin wasn't sure why Xander couldn't have met him on a lower floor. He realized that putting his home base on an upper floor added a measure of safety, but this high up seemed unnecessary. Of course, maybe it had been calculated, designed this way to slow any visitor or interloper down. He hadn't even come face to face with his daughter's kidnapper, and Austin was already spent, his legs on fire, and near on to gasping for breath. He wouldn't be hard to take down in his current condition.
"Here," the man ahead of him huffed out, clearly not unaffected by the climb up what Austin had estimated to be 20 short flights.
Austin reached for the door and pulled it open, and was met with a gun aimed directly at his head. He held up his hands.
"I'm here for Xander," he said, trying to hide just how out of breath he was.
His escort shoved him hard between the shoulder blades.
"Move," he ordered.
Austin blinked several times to adjust his eyes to the lit hallway. He could hear a humming noise and realized it was the sound of computers and electricity in general. After living without the sound for so long, it felt foreign. He was pushed to the end of the hall and directed through a pair of wide wood double doors. And beyond the doors, there on a couch, he saw his daughter for the first time in more than a month, her eyes wide with fear.
"Savannah!"
Her face brightened, and she jumped up, only to be shoved hard back onto the couch by the tall man who'd been standing next to her. Austin would have run to her himself, but his escort was still with him, holding him from behind by his upper arm. Smarter to stay here anyway, he told himself. If the man shot him, she wouldn't be caught in the crossfire. Still, he looked her over. She looked unharmed, but she'd lost weight, and there were dark circles under her eyes. He hated that she'd suffered, and he hadn't been there to help or take care of her.
"Dad, I was so worried," she choked out.
Austin thought she might jump again, but she stayed still.
"Quiet, girl. Your daddy and I have business to discuss," the man beside her snarled.
Austin tensed, but he swallowed down curses and told himself to stay calm.
"Xander?"
he asked, staring at this man who dared kidnap his daughter.
"In the flesh. You're looking hale and hearty. I guess you didn't take a bullet after all," he said, looking Austin up and down.
"I'm here." Xander smiled. "Then you give me what I want, and you get what you want." Austin slowly shook his head.
"I somehow doubt that. Here's the deal. You let me and my daughter walk out of here, and your precious USB doesn't fall into the wrong hands. I'll even destroy it if you want me to. In case something happens to me or her, however, I've left it in the hands of someone who has the means to look at everything on the drive."
The look on Xander's face showed a combination of irritation and disbelief.
"Liar, you wouldn't risk your daughter's life."
Austin shrugged, willing his face to remain flat. "I would be happy to work out an arrangement once we are out of here." In a move so fast that Austin couldn't have anticipated it, Xander reached down and yanked Savannah from the couch by her hair. She screamed in pain, struggling to stand. Xander wrapped his arm around her neck in a terrifying chokehold before pressing the barrel of a Glock 19 against her head. Austin made an instinctive step forward, but the soldier behind him tightened his grip on his arm, yanking him a step back toward the door.
"Now, give me the USB or I will shoot her. You don't want to play with me. I was sent to do one job, and I will complete my mission. I'm not one of those men who has a rule about shooting kids. I shoot anyone who is in my way," Xander growled. And Austin believed him.
His heart pounding, Austin realized he should have anticipated this move. He'd already known the guy was ruthless, kidnapping a defenseless girl to get her dad's attention. He looked back at Savannah, tears running down her face as the man held her tight. Her face was turning red as she struggled to breathe.
Okay, let her go. I'll give you the drive," Austin said,
reaching for his front pocket. The man who'd led him upstairs tightened his grip on his arm, but Xander nodded, and Austin yanked it out of his grip, shooting him a glare before using his fingers to reach into the pocket and pull out the USB he'd stored there, still in its plastic case. He held it up, watching Xander's eyes light up.
"I knew you'd bring it," Xander said with a grin, not releasing Savannah.
"Let her go, or I will smash this thing right here," Austin warned him. Xander hesitated. Austin used his finger and thumb to pop open the case, ready to follow through with his threat. Finally, Xander lowered the gun from Savannah's head and loosened the chokehold grip he had around her neck. Savannah took advantage of the small respite and clamped her teeth down on the flesh of his forearm. Xander shouted and shoved Savannah hard, sending her directly into Austin's arms as he raised the gun at father and daughter. Austin pushed her to the side as she reached him and lunged forward, more than prepared to take a bullet if it would keep her out of the line of fire. Austin outweighed the smaller man and tackled him to the ground, the USB getting knocked out of his hands and sliding under the sofa where Savannah had been sitting. There were shouts all around them as the man who'd been guarding Austin came forward to break up the wrestling match on the floor, and other men entered behind him to help pull Austin off Xander. They were slow to appear, though, and the rage coursing through Austin gave him superhuman strength. He punched Xander hard in the face for a third time, blood spurting from his nose. He cocked his arm back, ready to hit the man again when he was yanked backwards. Savannah screamed behind him, and Austin looked up to find two men pointing their AR-15s directly at him. Xander climbed to his feet in front of him and picked up the Glock that had fallen from his hand when Austin had tackled him. He used the back of his hand to wipe the blood from his nose, staring at the red on his hand, before looking at Austin, who was on his knees in front of him.
"Stupid move," Xander sneered, blood staining his teeth an ugly red.
"No, don't!"
Savannah screamed. Austin wanted to comfort her, to tell her everything would be all right, but that would have been a lie. He'd screwed up. He'd made a move, and it had been the wrong one.
"Let her go. You have me. You have the USB. So let her go," Austin said in a quiet voice, staring into the eyes of the man who he now knew for sure would be killing him.
"You seem to think you have bargaining power. You have nothing."
"I've won," Xander said, aiming the Glock directly at Austin's head.
"Actually, I've won."
Amanda's voice cut through the room. Austin froze, shocked, and then he fell to the right and back when the men who'd been surrounding him turned. He lunged forward for Savannah's legs and toppled her to the ground at the same time weapons began firing. Savannah was screaming as Austin moved his body over hers, covering her the best he could. Then the gunfire stopped for a brief, precious second. Austin's ears were ringing as he lifted his head to see his little brother motioning for him to get up and out of the room. Austin sprang to his feet, pulling Savannah up with him and out of the room before racing behind Amanda as she ran for what he assumed to be the opposite stairwell from the one they'd used coming up. There were bodies scattered in the hall, their throats cut. Austin didn't take the time to think about who had done it. His brother, Amanda, and Nash had done what was necessary to save him and his daughter, and he'd never hold the gruesome murders against them. There were shouts behind them as they ran, and Austin glanced over his shoulder to see Ennis pause briefly to turn and open fire at the men in the black uniforms racing after them. Austin pushed Savannah in front of him, placing her between himself and Nash, with Amanda leading the charge. Amanda smashed out a window at the end of the hall and practically dove through, surprising Austin. Nash and Savannah followed suit. He jumped onto the fire escape and looked back to make sure Ennis was still behind him. His hearing was shot. All he could hear was a loud ringing sound. Seeing Ennis coming, he raced down the stairs. The fire escape was sturdy, and though the height and open air had caught his breath for a moment, navigating the iron escape downward was almost a relief, since it meant they were in open air, that much closer to the ground as they made their way down one flight after another. The trip down took half as long as the climb to the top as they slipped and slid downward, preferring to fall over being shot or caught. "Everyone okay?" Amanda asked breathlessly once they were all on the ground. Austin looked at Savannah first and saw no obvious signs of injury.
"All good!"
Ennis shouted, clearly suffering the same temporary deafness.
"We need to go, now!" Nash yelled, pointing behind them before lifting his gun.
Everyone moved behind Nash and Amanda, while she and the kid mowed down the men in black pouring around the corner of the building, like ants out of a dirt mound.
"Run!"
Austin shouted, pulling his daughter behind him as they raced back towards the river. Behind him, he heard Amanda and Nash stop shooting and join his family, signaling that the soldiers must have been stopped, however temporarily.
"Not that way. The kayaks are too slow. We'll be easy targets," Nash called out.
Just then, an explosion rocked the ground they were standing on. Austin turned to his left and saw a building explode with another huge boom before fire filled the night sky.
"Run!"
Ennis screamed. Austin couldn't believe what he was seeing. A rocket launcher? They were trying to kill them with a rocket launcher. He was glad someone was a really bad aim. Another loud boom rang out, and the building a few feet to their right burst into flames, sending shards of glass and cement flying into the air. He automatically tried to cover his head to protect it from falling debris. Ahead of him, Savannah was racing up the street behind Nash, terror giving her unhuman speed. Austin's leg pinched as he chased his daughter, running faster than he'd ever run in his life. The heat coming from the fires was overwhelming, especially combined with the acrid smell of burning insulation and what he had to assume was flesh. His stomach turned as they continued to run. Every few seconds, Ennis would stop to spray a round of bullets at their pursuers. After running until their bodies simply wouldn't allow them to run another foot, they slowed down to a fast walk, each of them breathing hard as they sucked in smoky air.
"Dad, are you okay?"
Savannah gasped.
"I'm fine. Keep moving,"
he ordered.
"You gave him the USB thing,"
she asked.
"You did?"
Amanda asked, turning to look at him with horror on her face. Austin grinned.
"I gave him a USB, not the USB.
Amanda smiled.
"Good job. Now can we please get out of here before this entire city goes up in flames?"
They picked up their pace after the brief reprieve, but all was quiet behind them. They hurried out of the city, heading for the mountains and what Austin hoped was a safe place to stay for the foreseeable future. He wasn't naive enough to believe they'd taken out the entire team of men in black, but they had done some serious damage. Xander was dead. He only wished he could have been the one to shoot him. Once they reached the woods outside the city that would lead to Ennis's house, Savannah stopped walking and threw her arms around Austin.
"I'm so glad you're alive," she suddenly sobbed.
Austin hugged her back, feeling her emotions bubbling to the surface. She'd held it together this long, just as he had, but having her back in his arms meant everything.
"I'm here. You're safe. We're going back to your uncle's house. We'll have plenty of time to catch up then," he promised her. "We're okay now. I love you, baby."
She nodded, muttering, "I love you, Dad," back, and finally wiping her eyes before she released him and started moving again. Austin walked behind the others, staring at their backs. He would be forever grateful and indebted to the people in front of him. Nash was a complete stranger, and he had put his life on the line to save Savannah. The idea of that would have been unfathomable for him just a month before. He couldn't have been happier to face the end of the world with Nash, Amanda, Ennis, and his daughter.
36. Nash hefted the crowbar he held, confident it was what they needed to get into the door in the mine.
"Are you sure this is worth our time and energy?" Austin asked as they stood in front of the mine, one of the glow sticks they'd taken from Ennis's stash of survival gear illuminating the area.
"I guess we're about to find out," Nash said with a grin.
With that, he put the crowbar into place and got to work. Soon, with him and Austin pulling, they managed to break the lock on the door and then pry it open.
"Holy," Austin muttered, holding up the light stick and moving it around the room.
"Why? Why would this be in here?" Nash asked.
He hadn't known what to hope for or expect, but the mystery of this door had been too much to pass up. He'd maybe expected a generator, or extra gear related to the mine, or even safety equipment or stored water bottles. But this? It was a room of about 12 by 12, filled with electronic equipment and machinery, including several laptops, flashlights, and satellite phones. This wasn't anything related to mining. It was storage of laptops and gear related to survival. Recovering from their shock, Austin and Nash traded looks and then began gathering a sampling of items, placing it back outside of the door, and then doing what they could to disguise the break-in. They'd carry away what they could, planning to come back again if needed.
"What do you think?" Austin asked as they emerged from the mine.
"About? Who put all that in there?
Doesn't it seem like someone purposely hid that equipment in the earth to protect it from the EMP blast? Like they knew it was coming?" Austin asked.
Nash looked at him.
"I don't know who, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was the people who've taken over Denver."
"You think they know about the house?" Austin asked.
The question had been weighing on Nash's mind since they'd found the stash.
"I don't know, but I think we have to be prepared for anything."
Austin stared straight ahead.
"It's off the beaten path. We're miles away from the mine. Someone would have to go out of their way to find it."
"I found it," Nash reminded him, "if only by accident."
"Yeah, I know," Austin acknowledged. "We'll need to set up some security. There's enough of us at the house that we can set up watches. 4 people watching, 1 in each direction. We'll need to train some of those religious folks in how to use guns," Austin said, thinking aloud.
Nash hesitated as he listened, not sure how to say what was on his mind, but he figured he may as well get it off his chest.
"What do you think about Wendell?" he asked.
Austin shrugged, glancing at Nash and smiling.
You don't like him, he stated.
Nash's gut told him that it wasn't a matter of liking him, but of being able to trust him for even a moment. But he couldn't say that without more reason than a gut feeling.
I don't know. There's something about him that rubs me the wrong way.
I don't remember him. No matter how much he tries to tell me we were buddies in high school, I don't remember him at all. He was younger than I was, and I was more into athletics than the band, Austin commented. I haven't been around him enough to get a feel for him one way or another.
Nash nodded. Austin was an attractive, athletic guy, and wouldn't likely have been hanging around the likes of Wendell.
Nash himself was a bit of a nerd with his high IQ, but he wasn't whiny like Wendell, and he'd always been committed enough to geology that he'd stayed in shape. That, along with his natural athleticism, had barely elevated him above the rest of the nerd crowd, but it had.
I don't think he likes me either, so maybe it's partly that, Nash said, pushing a tree branch out of the way.
If nobody else had the feeling he had, maybe it was mostly that, Nash told himself. It was hard to like someone who didn't like you, right?
Why do you say that? Austin asked.
He's always staring at me when he thinks I'm not looking, like,
ah, heck, the look I see, it's like he wants to kill me while I'm sleeping, that kind of stare.
Austin chuckled.
I think you can handle Wendell. Don't let him bother you. If you see him doing something shady, though, tell me. With close to 20 people living in that house, we all need to be able to trust each other.
How long do you think those revivalists will stick around? Nash asked. He knew he didn't have any more of a right to be there than they did, but the house felt crowded now.
I don't know. I have a feeling Tanya and Malachi Loveridge will probably stick with us for a while. She's not doing so well. I don't know if she's ill or grieving, but I think it's better if she rests and regains her strength, Austin said quietly.
They were originally planning on dropping off Savannah and heading on to their home in Utah, but I don't think she's up to it now, after losing her husband like she did.
Nash agreed with Austin. The woman had lost her father and husband in a month's time. She was dealing with a lot more than the rest of them. Nash wasn't sure about his own family, but had to believe his brothers were taking care of their mom. The family home was in the country outside Nashville. His brothers all lived around the area and would have rushed to her when things got bad. The way things were now, he felt he had to trust them to take care of her. Setting off on his own to cross the territory between him and them might not be suicide, but with the way things were at the moment, it would be a far cry short of smart, too.
The men continued to walk on in silence, focusing more and more on the effort required to haul what they'd found back to the house as the terrain got rougher. There was plenty to think about, too. It had been 2 days since they'd barely escaped with their lives from the city. They'd spent the day before taking stock of supplies and organizing the house a little. They'd traveled another mile or so when Nash's thoughts finally turned to the laptop he'd taken from the mine and put in his pack. It took his mind back to the USB that had gotten Austin and Savannah into trouble in the beginning. And now that the strange door in the mine had been opened, it was the most immediate mystery at hand.
"What do you think we'll find on that USB?" Nash asked.
"I have no idea. The guy who gave it to me was a bit of a wingnut. The kind of guy who sees a conspiracy at every corner. We were drinking buddies in college, but I hadn't seen him since then. Obviously, this time he was onto something. It cost him his life. And Xander went to great lengths to try and get it back."
"What are you going to do with it once you figure it out?" Nash couldn't help asking.
Austin laughed. "I think you might be needed for the figuring out part of it. I'm not a techie. I can plug it in and pull up files, but if there's a bunch of technical stuff, I'm going to refer it to you." Nash remained quiet for a minute. I think it's best if we keep this stuff to ourselves for now, if you know what I mean.
Austin turned to look at him.
Wendell?
Nash nodded, glad Austin had understood what he meant without bringing the guy back up again.
Something isn't right with that guy. I'd like to think I'm imagining it, but I've learned to trust my instincts. There's something off there.
We'll keep it to ourselves, Austin agreed.
37. Austin, Nash, Ennis, and Amanda huddled in Ennis's bedroom. The door was closed and locked. The hum of voices from beyond the door filled the room that was otherwise quiet enough for them to hear a pin drop as Austin turned on the laptop. It had long since been agreed that no one else needed to know they had a working computer or anything else about the USB. Savannah had had a good idea about what her father was doing when he'd left that morning, but Austin had kept their discovery vague. He didn't want to risk her knowing too much and being in danger once again. He also didn't know Malachi, or any of the stragglers the revivalist group had picked up. Trusting Nash was maybe something of a risk, but his gut told him the kid was okay. Plus, Austin didn't know enough about computers to do much more than plug the drive in.
Wait, Amanda said when he turned on the laptop.
Wait for what? Austin asked.
Do we really want to know what's on that thing? She asked.
Beside her, Nash's eyes went wide, as if the idea of not finding out hadn't even occurred to him, and Austin had to hide a grin in reaction. Mysteries ate at the kid, just like they ate at him.
Austin met Amanda's eyes, and his voice was firm when he answered, "Yes."
She sighed. "All right. But once we know, we know. You said your friend wanted you to get that to someone in the government. What if having it incriminates you and all of us?"
He shrugged. "We'll destroy it if it looks like it could be something that gets us in trouble."
"It could be a bargaining chip for the future," Nash commented.
"I want nothing to do with that group," Austin said.
"Maybe not, but that ship has sailed. We picked a fight with them. They didn't seem the type to go away with their tails between their legs," Nash replied quietly.
"Who cares about that?" Ennis demanded. "Let's see what it is, and then we'll figure out what to do with it."
Austin agreed with Ennis. He plugged the USB into the port and waited. A few seconds later, the screen lit up, and his eyes glued themselves to the screen. Gasps from over his shoulder drowned out the hum of voices in the living room. Austin could only stare, his mouth hanging open, as he took it all in.
This has been Survive the Chaos, Small Town EMP, Book 1, written by Grace Hamilton. Narrated by Maxwell Zener. Copyright 2019 by Relay Publishing. Production copyright 2019 by Relay Publishing.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.